you've been anabolic since
I don't know. It's just, I think I knew I was not going to be good at sports, so I just had to train for it.
Welcome to Coach Me Up. My name is Tim Riley. I'm here with the legendary Zach Zillner, and this is episode one. This episode is not going to be indicative of what future episodes are going to look like. Typically, we're going to have a guest. Typically, it's going to be much more training focused, and anything surrounding training, business, social media. But today, with it being the inaugural pod, I want to give the listeners, the viewers, an opportunity to get to know us. We're going to spend some time talking about our background, and there's a question that Zach and I get so often, either from aspiring coaches or current coaches, and it's pretty broad, but that question is, how did you get to where you are? My hope is that one, for today's pod, we're able to give you guys some insight into who I am, who Zach is, where this whole thing, this training, strength and conditioning lifestyle started for us, both personally and professionally. And then woven into that is to answer the question, how did we get here? So Zach, I think it's best if you start us off because I've already been talking long enough.
Let's do it. I'll get on.
So as far back as you want to go, and you know, typically a reoccurring theme, at least I know for you and me, is like I fell in love with training before I knew I wanted to be a coach. I don't know if that's your experience.
Absolutely.
So maybe start us back all the way to, you know, childhood
there
Zach.
We go. Childhood meathead Zach.
That's right, dude.
I knew what I wanted to do. So my mom actually got me into lifting. So when I was like in kindergarten or maybe before that, you know, you grew up watching movies of like Conan the Barbarian or any Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. And I'm like, Mom, like, how is Arnold so freaking big? She's like, he lifts weights. Like, you know how mom goes and works out in the morning? Like, that's what Arnold does every single day. And I was like, well, I want to do that. She's like, cool. And so I remember being like five and she would work out every day at 5 a.m., go to this place. She'd have a trainer, and I was like, cool, I'm going to go with you. So she'd wake me up at whatever, 4:30 before school. We'd get in the car, go to this fitness studio. It was like one of those private personal training things where it was like a booth for every person. And I got lucky that the trainer there saw I had a huge interest. So he had like 1 pound weights, 2 pound weights, 3 pounds.
God,
and I'd be next to my mom in the morning, like ripping it out. And
dude, you've been anabolic since five.
I don't know. It's just, I think I knew I was not going to be
incredible, dude.
Good at sports. So I just had to train for it. So I think after that, my mom took me like to the pediatrician for a checkup and she's like, is it okay for this kid to be lifting weights? You know, like lifting weights stunts your growth and all this other stuff. And luckily my pediatrician was ahead of the curve and he's like, here's what you need to do. Like she got me a pyramid weight set and it was like ones, twos, threes, fours, fives. And the pink ones were the ones, and it was like yellows were the twos, so all the like colors you don't want as a guy.
Yeah.
And then the fives were blues.
Gotta get to
And so I was like,
blues.
I gotta get to those blues. And so he made me kind of like a circuit that I'd go through. So I had to get like 50 pressing the dumbbells over my head, 50 squats, like all this stuff. And so like at first I couldn't do it. So every day after school, I'd be in there trying to get 50 in a row, blah, blah, blah.
God, and then, screw one by 20.
Right?
Dude.
One by 50. I was ahead of the game, head of the game. So I'd do that. And then I'd have my mom like come and check my form.
Yeah.
And then she'd be like, all right, pinks are done. You're on to yellows. And I get back to work, doing it again. So I was a weird little kid. Like I like stuff like that. Yeah. And like, my mom would time me like running around the house, like how fast could I run around the house while she's making dinner? And I'm sure she'd make up times calling them out the window.
Sure.
But I remember just being at a young age, just like killing myself, doing sprints in the backyard, climbing things, like all this weird stuff. I'm sure our neighbors are like, what the heck are they running over there? And then I got fortunate enough where my parents let me play sports. So my parents growing up never played sports. They came from big families. So it was like, you work at a young age, sports are a luxury. You don't get that luxury. So the cool thing that I got instilled with was like hard work.
Yeah.
And so it was like, my dad caddied on golf courses when he was like, you know, eight. My mom did various jobs like that as well. And so it was like, hey, work ethic, work ethic, work ethic. So
were they very much so like parents, like the, we walked uphill both ways.
Absolutely. Just, snow. Yeah. And you have it so easy. And I was like, well, I'm going to make mine harder by lifting these weights and everything. Exactly.
Throw this pink dumbbell.
Exactly. Which was good. Cause there was no pressure of like, my dad was never like coached me on like, I didn't play well during a game because he had no idea what was going on. Cause he didn't play basketball or football or any of the other sports, which was kind of a luxury for me. So growing up, I was always lifting weights in my basement and whatnot. And then when I get to high school, you have summer weights.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is sweet. It's strength conditioning. I get to actually go and train. And so I would come in the morning with a freshman, do that. And then I had so much fun. I was like, is there any way I could come in the afternoon with like the upperclassmen? And they're like, sure, whatever you want. So I'd go to weights like twice a day.
Dude.
And I got so into lifting. Like, I love that. Cause you could see like week to week, especially at that age, like you get stronger every time you come in the weight room.
100%.
So I was like, this is awesome. Played the traditional like football, basketball, track. I ended up playing rugby in college.
Did you play?
University of Kansas.
Nice.
And so basically found that I like training more than the actual games. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first sign that you're a strength coach. You actually like conditioning and practice. Like, I love the process of practice. I love the process of conditioning, all that kind of stuff. And so I hated the games. I was like, God, we could be training right now or something. And part of it was I was a mediocre athlete at best, but I was like kind of the annoying kid where it's like, he shows up every day. He works hard. Like, we're going to have to play him. So that's kind of how I found my niche of like becoming a captain and eventually like being the hard work guy that you could count on all the time. And I had no idea that it would take me into this career. So I was thinking, you know, I'm going to go to college, get my business degree, and then sell stuff or who knows what regular people do.
Yeah.
And I was working at my mom's office. Her receptionist, I think, was on leave for like, she had a baby. And mom's like, hey, instead of doing construction work with your dad this summer, you're going to be the receptionist because we don't have anyone to do that. And I was like, ah, well, it's air conditioned, so whatever. And I remember sitting there and people every day, like, what are you going to do in college? What are you going to do? And I was like, I want to train athletes. And they're like tape ankles or like be a trainer. I was like, no, like lift weights, all that kind of stuff. And that wasn't very much out there at the time. And I got lucky that one day, one of the people that worked there, she was like, oh, no way. Like, my brother-in-law does that for North Carolina men's basketball. I was like, give me his email, give me his phone number, whatever. And so shoot him an email, and this will come full circle in 30 minutes when I'm done talking. but shoot him an email. He tells me he knows a strength coach at the University of Kansas where I just happened to go. It's like 40 minutes from where I grew up in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So I emailed the assistant strength coach at the time, Derek Honnold, and I was like, hey, I'm a senior in high school, would love to come shadow you for a day. And he's like, sure, man, come up. So I showed up, had my resume, not even sure what was on it. I wore a suit. Like, I was ready to get this internship.
Let's freaking
like,
go.
I was like, game plan.
They say dress for the job you want. They didn't know that meant sweatpants and, and a shitty t-shirt.
So I show up in a suit and I was like 17 and this guy's like, all right, you got a suit on. I was like, yeah, it's interview. Gotta look good, play good, you know, Deion Sanders thing. And so I toured the facility and I was like, when can I apply to intern? He's like, you got to talk to the boss. So that was Andrea Hootie. So she was the head of Olympic sports at Kansas and the head of men's basketball. So anyone that knows anything about basketball, KU's like the creme de la creme of basketball schools. So once again, lucky that I, you know, got into a school that was super good at basketball. He's like, you got to get past Hootie if you want to do an internship. I knocked on her door. I'm like, hey, I'm Zach. I'm following around Derek for the day. Like, I'd love to intern for you. And she's like, no. Like, you got to wait till you're senior and graduated. And I was like, well, what if I want to do it now? And she's like, we don't do that. And I was like, well, what if we could make an exception and do that? And she's like, sure. You come every day, you clean. You're not part of the internship process at all, but you can clean, help out, whatever. And I was like, cool. I'm really good at that stuff. Anyways, grunt work. That's my middle name right
there. Sign me up.
Yeah. And so First day of college, I show up. She's like, be there at 6, get there at 5:30. You know, they open the doors. She's like, there's the cleaning stuff. Get to work. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, cleaning. She's like, once you're done with cleaning, then you can observe teams. And so I'm like, okay. This weight room's like a football-sized weight room. It's just me cleaning. I was like, it's going to take me 3 or 4 hours to do this. So I'm like, okay, I got to get here early in the morning, clean it all. I knew men's basketball trained at 2 o'clock every day. So I was like, I got to be done with that by 2. Somehow I got to figure out a time to go to class. And may or may not have done that all the time. And so I'd find a way to be there at 2. And so I did that for like 2 years. And then I kind of got lucky. Like halfway through my sophomore year, we had a bunch of staff leave. So they got new jobs at other schools. So it was just Hootie and I. And she's like, all right, dude, like you've been here for 2 years. You've been cleaning. Like it's time to go. Like coach these guys up. And I was like, oh, shoot. Like
it's happening.
Got to go. And so I'm like, okay, all the things I've observed, I can put plates on. I can help guys through the exercises, everything like that. And, you know, I didn't suck apparently. And then she offered me like a paid internship opportunity, which was cool. And so from there, I ended up graduating, thank God. And I left with one of the basketball coaches at the time to go to Southern Miss. Southern Miss was in Conference USA at the time, so way smaller, way less resources than Kansas. So came to Southern Miss. I was like 22, 23. I had men's basketball, women's basketball, and volleyball. And I also was in charge of a GA. So it was like a lot for a 22 or 23-year-old.
Dude, that's a lot. Your first go like that?
So it's like I show up and I've had teams on my own at Kansas, but like there you have like the backstop of like if Hootie endorses you, you're good. And so I go to this new spot and the head men's coach hired me, so he's good with me. But like the women's coach didn't hire me and neither did the volleyball coach. So I'm like, okay, how do I manage 3 teams? The weight room we had was probably the size of 2 of these studios, like super small. We had like 2 racks, set of dumbbells. That was it. So moved down there, got that thing rolling. I was only there for like 10 months. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity at the University of Illinois opened up. So went north. And I had women's basketball, volleyball, and golf. And so a little more experience. I had almost a year of, you know, full-time experience under my belt. Mm-hmm. And then kind of navigating the same things of like, okay, this is a little more higher level, more resources, more pressure.
Did you have more than dumbbells and 2 racks?
Yeah, we had a few machines. The weight room was quite a bit bigger. We had some sports tech, all that fun stuff. At the time, I was 24. And so still like very green with everything, but I was like, you know, I'm going to put in the time. There's also other really good assistant coaches there. So I was like, okay, once I'm done training with my teams, I'm going to watch these people who've been doing it for 10 plus years, how they run their teams, what their thought process is through everything. So it's constantly like almost in this intern mindset of like, I need to learn as much as possible so I can be prepared and present that to my teams.
Real quick. Yeah. So when you mention that, cause that's something that I share with you is a perpetual sort of intern mindset where I always felt compelled to continue to learn, to continue to get educated. What's the driving force behind that for you?
I think the biggest thing is like I felt not imposter syndrome because I feel like that's overused all the time, but I just felt like the more you learn about a certain field, the more you realize you don't know anything.
Yeah.
And so you'd get all this information. By that time, there wasn't that much stuff on the internet. So it wasn't like mine was going all over the place, but I would see other coaches execute things more clean than I was, or like go through a group more seamlessly than me. And I was like, well, obviously that's reps, but how can I, you know, close the gap on those reps so I can eventually get somewhere bigger and better? So I was there for about a year and a half, and then Hootie called me and she was like, hey, job opened up at Kansas, my dream school, alma mater, hometown, back with all my buddies and everything. So I was like, sweet. It's my last stop at 26. Like I did it. Like you usually don't get to pick where you want to live. So I get there, it's men's and women's basketball, softball, golf, tennis. Like I had a bunch, like 6 teams. So coaches now, like you'll get a job, it's 1 team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, what a luxury.
Yeah,
that would be. And so,
obviously I know you're about to get to this, but yeah. You're the head strength and conditioning coach for women's basketball at Texas, but quick rabbit hole here. Can you talk a little bit about how working with all those other teams impacted the coach you are today?
Totally. I think like anything we do in life, whether it's coaching or business or sales or cooking or whatever, like it's reps.
Yeah.
So the more time you can get coaching athletes, like if I always tell interns, like don't come and intern for me unless you've done an internship somewhere else, because you have 15 people to coach and I'm probably coaching the majority of them. So the amount of times you getting reps is going to be limited. So if you can go somewhere, when I was an intern, I worked track and field. So it's like you have 100 athletes, one full-time strength coach, and then an intern. So it's like you're going to have to lead some of those groups just because of the nature of the overlap, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And the cool thing with being exposed to so many different athletes is you'll have athletes along your way that remind you of other athletes that you've had.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, this athlete,
regardless of sport.
Correct. Had this build, they had these kind of injuries, or they're really good at these type of lifts. Like maybe we should just lean towards that way. Working with track was also a huge advantage because everything is very objective. Like, you did this program for 4 weeks, you tapered like you should, did they get faster? Mm-hmm. Okay, they didn't. Was it stuff they're doing on the track? Was it stuff they're doing in the weight room? All these other factors. So you can kind of go and see, you know, if your training program is actually working or not. I think with court sports or field sports, like a lot of that can be hidden if like you just got hoopers,
yeah,
or guys that can run really fast.
The skill can cover up,
correct,
some of that stuff.
Correct.
And or a lot of it, I should say.
I kind of like the objective nature of track with that. But the opportunity to get so many reps at like such a young age, like, kind of armed you for being able to like develop your coaching voice. Cause if you're in charge of a smaller group, it gives you a little bit of time to be able to communicate and talk. My first team ever that I had as an intern was cheer and dance. And so it was like,
wait, time out. Yeah. Your first team ever was cheer and dance.
Cheerleading and then the dance team.
Okay.
And so you'd have like 60 athletes at 6 a.m. It's like, okay, how do I get 60 athletes who've never lifted before to like lifting, not get hurt, stay out of everybody else's way, like also get treated with the gold glove treatment like you do everybody else. And so that kind of gave me, it's a low risk. Like if, you know, the cheerleaders aren't in shape, it's not going to lose a national championship or anything like that. So it gives you a chance to program for a smaller population with less risk of, you know, getting fired. So it's kind of one of the things like, how can I communicate to this big group? And you kind of get your coaching feet underneath you. And then by the time you have, you know, a team where there's a lot of pressure, a lot of stuff on the line, like you have a sense to be able to like command the room. And I think a lot of coaches, they're so good at knowing the book stuff.
Yeah.
And you ask them to lead a warm up and it's like, oh my God, like I can't do this. And I was the same way. Like the first time I ever had to lead a warm up, I remember Hootie was like, you're leading the women's basketball warm up. And I was like a sophomore in college at the time. I was like, oh my God, so nervous.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to put yourself in those situations where it's like, all right, this is the first time I'm going to do this. Probably shouldn't be well or good, but I'm going to do it to the best of my abilities and I'll get feedback after that and hopefully learn from it and get better.
Which is exactly what we're doing with this podcast episode, by the way. So, you know, continue. So you're at Kansas now.
I was at Kansas. I thought that was going to be my last stop. It was like my dream, essentially. Like I got to work with Hootie again, which was like, if you can find a really good mentor and someone that's been doing it at a high level, like that's what you should be looking for in an internship, not necessarily a big logo or anything like that. Like find someone who's been doing it at a high level for decades. And then learn from them, be a chameleon, like absorb everything they do and try to formulate that into how that fits with your personality and style with everything. So I was like, cool, back with Hootie. We're working full time together. Like, this is awesome. And after like not even a year, she came and knocked on my office and was like, hey, Texas women's coach, she wants to interview you. I was like, oh, well, let me think about it. She's like, no, you don't understand. Like, it's Texas. And I was like, okay. And she's like, your interview is tomorrow. Get your suit, get your resume polished up. You're going. I'm like, oh my God. Like I just got here. Okay. And so I went down to Austin, interviewed well, apparently, got the job and was on the road the next day. And so show up at that time, it was just women's basketball. This was definitely the most high pressure situation I've been in as far as like, you have 15 people. This is your area. Like, you're directly responsible for everything good and bad that goes on in this space.
Yeah.
And so we had so many resources. And the idea of at Texas, it's like they give the coaches everything. And then on your end, you need to succeed. And so that's where that pressure lies. Like, second place isn't good. You know, if your team isn't finishing the top 10 every year in the nation, not in like your region or whatever, like in the nation, then you're kind of on the hot seat, which mm-hmm. is like good and bad. Like,
sure.
It makes you really like sharpen your sword and go to work every day like you're trying to win a national championship, because that's the standard. If you look at any of the other sports there, like there's like Olympians, national champions everywhere. And so it's like, if you aren't a team in that top 10, you kind of feel like a loser.
Yeah.
Like, and so it kind of motivates you, you know,
yeah.
to get to a better spot. And then moving on, I've been here, this started my seventh season. I've had the opportunity to work with Hootie, came to Texas for a year, so I got to work with her again. And then Corey Schlesinger is here right now. And so anytime I find really good coaches that like want me to help out or observe, like I'm all about it. So when Corey got here, he's like, yo, can you help me get this thing kind of rolling? I was like, absolutely. Like, another awesome coach to look and learn from. And I think too many times, like, you kind of get stuck of like, I've been doing this for almost 10 years. Like, I know what I'm doing. I don't 100%. Need to
sure.
take time and work with this team. But like, just in the short 8 months that Corey's been here, it's like, help me fine tune what I'm doing, rethink what I'm doing. It's great to have like a sounding board of like, here's this athlete situation. Have you ran into something like this? What would you do? And kind of like an open think tank environment. So I think the like egoless kind of area that our weight room is really cool. Like, we collaborate with like Corey all the time. And then our assistant Caitlin, like, she's really green, but like, we ask her opinion on everything, cause she's sees it, maybe the stuff we don't see. So it's a really cool environment to kind of get better in. We also have really some talented Olympic strength conditioning coaches. So like Clint Martin, he does track and field at Texas. Anyone that knows anything about track and field, Texas is pretty dang good.
Yeah, they're all right.
And so Clint is a great resource to go over and watch and see like, okay, this is how they're making people run, jump, throw farther. Like, basketball is a lot of that. Maybe I could take a few things from Clint. So yeah, it's been a great situation as far as my journey. Definitely some highs and lows with everything. I think people, especially when you're young, I would get so caught up with comparing myself to everybody else of like, oh, there's another coach my age who has a bigger job than me, or I want to be here already instead of actually enjoying where you're at now and kind of making the big time where you're at.
Yeah.
And I used to hear that, like, make the big time where you're at. I was like, whatever, like, I'm out of here. And I really wish when I was younger, I took it in more at those smaller schools and realized like how fortunate you were and how lucky you would be in those situations. But yeah, it's been awesome kind of being here for the seventh year in a row. Austin's great. It's allowed me to meet some really cool people like yourself. Anna Craig actually intro'd us. So
yeah,
Anna's one of the Olympic sports
over there.
You gotta
have her on the
show. Oh, absolutely.
Sure. She's a stud.
And we used to train a couple times a week, and she's like, hey, you need to meet Tim Riley. Like, you guys would get it going. Like, he's the best. I was like, all right, well, I'll hit him up. And then I hit you up. We had a good training day, and I'm like, oh yeah, Tim's like, he's a good guy. Let's get it going. Then we kind of dove in that first time when we trained, like, your background with everything. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of blown away that like, two people are pretty much doing the same jobs, had two different ways of getting there.
Yeah.
And you should need to go into that. Like, it's really interesting how you are where you're
at.
Yeah.
So you and I, it's same, but different. Like, you know, we've arrived at the same place. Our paths to get there could not look more differently, but there are some reoccurring themes that are principles in my mind that I see as being guiding forces that have afforded us both the opportunity to be doing, and I don't want to speak for you, but it sure sounds like our dream jobs.
Yeah, this is a dream come true for
sure. It is. And, you know, some things that I picked up out of your story, and then I'll talk about myself, is one, you loved it. You fell in love with it. You've been in love with it. And I've talked about this before, you know, and even beyond that, you were driven. And something I've said is, give me someone who's obsessed with something over someone who just really likes it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, like, with the long hours and everything that we have with interns, I can tell, like, honestly, the first week, if someone's going to make it or not, like,
yeah.
they have no problem. And I get, like, the grind, but, like,
right.
if you really love something like the long hours and whatnot, like, let's not romanticize them, but like, it's as much as I dog on them or whatever, like, I freaking love it.
Yeah.
And you can tell a big difference between someone who's like doing it because they think it's like a cool job, which right. once you get into it, if you're after it for being a cool job, you ain't gonna last very long.
Right.
And then those that like actually genuinely love coaching. And
yeah.
Just seeing you with some of your groups, like I can tell like you live, breathe, eat this stuff every day. So yeah. That's cool.
I do love it. And, you know, some other things that I picked up too about your story is like, you know, obviously there's an obsession, there's a passion. But then there are other things that have put you in those positions to be successful that I see are a constant willingness to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Cause when people ask, you know, how did you get here? There's like the linear story, right?
Totally.
I fell in love with training. I knew in high school, it's what I wanted to do. I did the internships. I took jobs, you know, some hard work, a dash of what some people might call luck. Here I am.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff's true. But then paralleling that, like there are personality traits that afford you the opportunity to walk through the ups and downs of that process that I think are more important than the actual linear, than the bullet points on the timeline. And, you know, what I see in you that I see in myself is like, you know, constantly wanting to be better, constantly wanting to learn. You know, for me, that definitely comes from a place of like, I'm just not good enough.
You're good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But that was the origin of that. I assumed I wasn't the smartest.
Well, what's
in the room.
The thing?
I
like,
assumed. You know,
we always preach to our athletes. It's like get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Like yeah. We say that all the time. And then if you look in the mirror. And you're like, wait, it might be uncomfortable for me if I don't know something to call a coach I don't know that's maybe better at that.
Totally.
And I remember myself, like when you're young in the field, you get to that point where you know just enough to think you know everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dangerous place
to be. And
then
very dangerous. Like a 25-year-old.
For everybody.
Yeah, 25-year-old yeah. that thinks they know everything is a dangerous person.
100%.
And like, I'll 100%. Admit, like I was that guy at one time too. I was like, I got a full-time job at this age. Like, I have my background working with these athletes. Like, everybody should listen to me. Like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you can't tell me shit, dude.
Correct. And then you get humbled a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, okay, if I'm telling all these athletes to get uncomfortable, do things they don't like doing, like, I need to put myself out there. I need to call coaches who know more than me or observe sessions of coaches that know more than me and get better. If you actually do want to get better, like what you're preaching all the time. And we preach that. And then the whole, like, it's not the destination, it's the process.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so if it's not the destination, why are you so worried about your next job?
Right.
You know, you should be worried about what are the things that are going to put me in the best position to get to that job.
Yeah. Are you learning
of everything?
Are you doing everything you can to do a good job right
Correct.
Now?
Correct.
So, okay. So before I launch into my whole thing, if you could put a bow on those traits, those qualities, those principles that have served you, you know, getting to where you're at today. What are those things? Let's leave it there.
I think you got to be like an everyday guy or girl, like consistency. Like they have to know what they're getting every single day. So if you are the same, like I know with you every single day, I'm going to get a fun, easygoing person every time I see you. There's not never going to be a day where it's like, I hope it's not mopey or mopey.
Shitty diaper.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's raining. You know, like you want consistency every time and your athletes want that too. Like if you're changing your mood all the time, like we don't need that. Also dependability, like,
yeah.
Are you going to be here at this time? Do what you're supposed to, might have to remind you to do everything. And then I think persistence, like I could have easily that first time I went up there and the way she's like, and you can't come until you're a senior. I've been like, oh, mom, dad, I tried, can't come back till I'm a senior.
Yeah.
Oh, good. You tried, buddy. Way to go. It's like, no, yeah. Like. I'm not saying be annoying where it's like, no is never the answer.
Right.
But yeah, like, yeah. You need to be.
It's not a sales
correct.
Pitch. Yeah.
So it's like, if she was really adamant on like, you can't come in, all this stuff, then it's like, okay, well, let's Google What are some colleges within that area? What are some high schools? What are some private facilities within that area? And look at those places and get your reps in that way until you're more established, and then go from there. So I think when you're in that internship process, you think of it as just you, but like you're interning with a couple other people or people from all around the country. So it's all a competition at the end of the day. So if there's five interns in your little internship class and there's a job opening, the director is not going to recommend all five of you guys. Right. He's going to recommend one of you. So it's like, what are you doing to separate yourself from everybody else? Is that coming a little early? Is that staying a little late? Is that doing stuff before you have to be reminded to? Is that asking good questions? Is that just, you know, being a good team player within your role in the staff? Like, you got to figure out what separates you from everybody else and then ride that into the sunset.
God, so much of what you just said too takes me back to kind of what we discussed about just being obsessed and loving it and wanting to do it. You know, you, it becomes much less about willing yourself into doing these things when you want to do it.
Correct.
You know, it's like a relationship. When you first start dating someone and they're putting in effort, you know, you can usually tell
totally
if someone else is into the whole thing, right? But if they're taking 6-8 hours to respond to the text, or maybe it's the next day, or you're getting short responses, you know, you can pick up pretty quickly. Like, you know what? Maybe this person isn't that interested, and I need to hop back on my dating app or whatever.
Well,
you know,
it's easy to see. Like, and I always joke, like, your interview, like, you're basically, when you're an intern, like, they're dating you or whatever. So you need to show up like looking like you're that. So I tell my interns, like, it's head coach mentality. So you should show up every day, pretend I'm not even here. So if you were in my position, how early would you get here before a session? How early would you set up? How would you command the warm up? How would you do all these things? And if you practice that all the time, the second I'm sick or I'm like, hey, you're leading the warm up, like, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be one of those things like you're leading the warm up and you're like, oh God,
oh shit, for this, what do I do now?
Same warm up we do every single day for the whole year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I would kind of be obsessed with it to the point of I have stacks of journals at home. Like, every time we get done with a session, I would write down the workout, what went well, what didn't, what were some good coaching cues. And then I would revisit those the next week and the next month. And I didn't realize at the time how much valuable those would be when I was on my own.
Yeah.
So I would go through it and be like, what did she say when we had this tough session? Okay, go back. Okay, yeah, that was really good. Like, these little nuggets that, like, you hear and you're like, okay, that's good. But, like, if you write them down, and, like, it's like kind of like studying your film for strength coaches. Like, you should have something. If you are an intern, you should have a question about every session, because you don't know it all. And even if you do, like, there's so many intricacies of, like, why I coach it in something a certain way or that. And the more questions, the more engaged you are, it's just going to arm you for it when, like, you don't have me as a crutch when you go to your next job.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. You have more autonomy.
Exactly. Let's get into how you started.
Sure.
Speaking of saying, people saying no to you and everything.
So
you couldn't do it.
My story, same but different, very different in a lot of ways. I did not love training ever. Now, what I did love was sports, though. I liked playing. I started off with jiu-jitsu. I was good. I won a few national championships as a kid. I say that because back in the early 90s, jiu-jitsu wasn't cool and the talent pool was very small. Okay.
Hey, I don't
know. But I loved it, you know, and my ability to tap into something, you know, obsessively was apparent pretty young. And first it was jiu-jitsu, then it was basketball. I watched Michael Jordan play basketball and I was like, I want to be Michael Jordan.
Yes.
From sun up till sundown, this little ginger kid, I'd get so fried from the sun and I'm just doing the 3-2-1 step back, fade away, tongue out, the whole deal. Okay. So I fell in love with sports. I fell in love with being active early, but the hard work piece, not particularly, that's not what I leaned into naturally. As I grew up and as I got older, basketball became like my main love. Getting into middle school, started playing football and stuff. In fact, I remember I wanted to quit because practice was so hard. And my dad, you know, a gift that he gave me was I remember I was crying in his car and I wanted to quit. And he said, you're not fucking quitting. You're going to go back down there on that field and you're going to finish what you started. And I hated him for it at the time. I was crying. Yeah, I mean, I'm in seventh grade. I'm crying like I'm five, dude. He wouldn't let me quit. And I'm so grateful for that because I ended up playing, you know, through my sophomore year, and which is a good time to sort of transition into, you know, there's like my life leading up to sophomore year, and then things really kind of get crazy and really convoluted after that. So, you know, it's hard to separate training and, you know, my personal life and, you know, what it was like for me growing up. So as quickly as I can, I'll try and touch on that stuff. You know, parents were divorced. Father had serious drug addiction. And our house was constantly chaotic. They split when we were young. And there was never a lot of stability. There was never any real stability. And me and my brother kind of survived our childhood, would be a way to explain it. There was, you know, there was a lot of abuse, every form. So you can, you know, use your imagination. And by the time I was 12 and 13, I started getting arrested regularly. I, you know, smoked weed for the first time and got drunk for the first time on my 12th birthday. That changed my life forever. I was the kind of kid when
I was wild.
Yeah. My mom bought me a 6-pack of daiquiri, woodchuck daiquiri on my 12th birthday.
Dang.
My buddy drank half of it. I drank five of them. Okay. So there's a half of one left. I drank five of them and I drank them fast and they tasted like shit. And I asked my buddy, I said, why didn't you drink all yours? He said, because it tasted bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, give it to me. And I drank the rest.
Yeah.
That is the perfect, he was a normal person.
Yeah.
I was working with something different, which I later found out was addiction. Yeah. I loved the way that made me feel immediately. And you, if you had met me in kindergarten, you would have looked at me and be like, that kid needs a drink. Jesus. Someone give this kid.
Tight.
Someone give this kid a whiskey and Coke. You know, my life changed. That was a big milestone for me. And, you know, I love sports. I was good. And what I heard my whole life, you know, I was always late to class. I didn't do my homework. And school counselors, teachers, people always tried to intervene and they did their best. And the conversation would go something like this. Tim, you're so smart, allegedly. You're so talented. You're whatever. You know, we see potential. Something in you that you obviously don't see in yourself. You could be so great if you just applied yourself. And what they didn't know and what I didn't really know is, you know, when they would say that, I would say, I fucking want to do better.
Yeah, I'm not trying to do
I this. Want to be better. Yeah. I didn't have the skills. I didn't have the tools. And, you know, I wasn't in a place where life had beaten me down enough, evidently, where I was willing to really take a look in the mirror and make some changes. And that didn't come till much later. And eventually I got kicked out of school. You know, I couldn't play on the teams, you know, that happened first. I'm kicked off the teams because my grades. Then I got kicked out of school. The new school I went to, I dropped out of that school, focused on partying. And then my life, the only thing that was left was partying, drinking, doing drugs, selling drugs, and working out, you know. And I never thought working out would be a big part of my life. But once everything fell apart, all the structure I'd always had, what little structure I had with school and sports, I found that I could always return to working out. And that was, it became my North Star, it became my safe place.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I wanted to look good because I wanted a girlfriend, you know? Fair so enough. it was a double,
fair enough.
You know, it was a win-win. And from the time I dropped out of high school, I didn't graduate high school, I got my GED. You know, that following semester, I tried to go to community college. It didn't work. My life was, you know, at this time, I didn't know it, but I was in the full grips of alcoholism and drug addiction and living that lifestyle. And there were a lot of jobs that I started and got asked to leave. There were a lot of relationships that I really wanted to work out that could not because of how I was showing up. And basically, I continued on that way until I was 25. And one day, you know, I I'd stayed up later than I wanted to again. I'd gone out drinking when I said I wasn't going to. I was definitely going to miss work again. And I just had this moment, like, you know, the rock bottom moment. And I knew that if I didn't change everything, nothing was going to change. And I was going to end up dead or in jail, like a lot of the people I'd grown up with and around. And fortunately, that moment was the catalyst for change. I went to rehab, moved to South Florida, and my buddy got me a job working at a gym.
No way.
And this is where it starts. I'm working in sales, didn't know that. I just needed a job.
Yeah.
Had no car, no phone, no money, living in a halfway house, trying to get sober. I'm a 25-year-old, 12-year-old, you know, emotionally. And I start selling personal training, was good at it, hated it, was miserable because I knew I wasn't helping anyone. Yeah. In fact, if anything, I was ripping people off.
Yeah.
And then I got an opportunity to work in drug and alcohol treatment. And my job was a mentor for these young men. And, you know, I had 6 months, 7 months sober, and they had 2 days.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you're ahead of them.
I'm ahead of them, and I've got a little experience. And I would take them on outings, and one of them was the gym.
Mm.
And, you know, I was able, in between benders my whole life, I would go 6 months, just ravage my body. Then I'd go back to the gym. You know, I'd find a way to make it back. And it always stuck with me. And then in sobriety, early sobriety, if anyone listening to this is sober or knows anyone getting sober, the gym becomes a staple pretty quick. You got to start to fill your time with other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was able to show these young guys how to work out, what to do. And it was really rewarding. And, you know, I arrived at a place where I saw that I had an opportunity to do something that I liked that could pay me well enough that it made sense to give it a try. And I decided to get a personal training certification. It was like a year-long technical school type thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what requires you to get sober are some things that I've used in my life in training. And one of those things is getting a mentor, someone who's been there and done it, who's living a life or doing things the way that you aspire to do, and then being humble enough to ask them to show you how to do it, and then on your end, showing up and doing the necessary work to meet those standards to make that happen. And from the moment I started going through that certification process, I sort of leveraged this experience I had in being able to turn my personal life around into my professional life, where, much like you alluded to, I would find people, coaches, who were where I wanted to be, that I thought had something I didn't have that I wanted. And I would go to them and say, hey, man, I admire XYZ. I want to learn how to do these things. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I'll rack your weights. I'll show up early. I'll stay late. I'll help with your bookkeeping, whatever it takes. And
find a way.
I'll find a way, dude. And I'm really grateful because a lot of people, when approached in that way, will say yes.
Yeah.
And getting that first certification, there was a guy, his name was Marco. I said that. He said, yep. So what I would do is I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning. I would be there by 5, help him with his clients until 9. And then I would do the trade school personal training certification thing till 3. And then I would go to work from 4 to 8 or 4 to 9 after that. And I did that for about, that was like 6 months.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty intense.
It was super intense. And, like, you know, again, to not romanticize the grind, because, like, I wouldn't fucking do that today.
No.
Absolutely not. No. But there was a period of time in my life where it was obviously necessary.
Yeah. Well, to close that gap, like, you have to get in those reps. Like, while you're young, especially like 25-year-olds, you got all that energy in the world. So doing a 12-hour day, and probably for you, it helped fill all those gaps of time, channel it into something you actually wanted to do.
100%. And this was the first time in my life I'd ever been able to apply myself in a way that was truly productive, and in a way that was exciting. And I was actually able to sit in class, and I wanted to learn, and I wanted to be there. So it was a breath of fresh air.
Let's say, like, you never got involved in drugs and alcohol or whatever, do you think coaching would have found you, or do you think you'd be doing something else?
I don't know, dude. I don't know. That's tough because, like, you know, without there, so much of my life has been about things that in the moment feel like this is the worst possible thing that could happen to me. Mm-hmm. Later down the line, I'm able to look in the rear view and say, had it not been for that thing that I was so certain was ruining my life or was the worst thing that had ever happened to me, is now become my biggest asset. Or if it wasn't for this thing happening, I wouldn't have been nudged in the direction that I had been nudged in, sometimes forced into.
You might not have been able to have, you know, hitting rock bottom kind of forces you to dig yourself up.
Have to.
Do things you don't want to do. So I don't know.
Well, you don't necessarily have to. Plenty of people hit that. You can hit bottom more than
stay
once.
Stay there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know if necessarily, if you had everything going for you, if you would have done the get up at 4:30, work for this guy,
no.
Go to school, work again. Like,
yeah. And at that time, you know, we were pregnant with my daughter. So, you know, I'm newly sober. I needed a job better than being a mentor at a rehab facility. And I needed money. And it became another situation where it was like, this is my only option.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, like, my only option was something that
you love doing.
I ended up, and I didn't even know how much I loved doing it till I started doing it. You know, so I finished that certification, and then from there, but through that experience, this fire was ignited in me where I had the formula, I had the playbook, I could do my certs, my seminars, and stuff on this end, and get the theoretical knowledge and things that I could nerd out about and obsess over and gnaw on and chew. But then on the other end, I understood that all that stuff pales in comparison to practical experience, to being hands on. You got to stand on the firing line. You have to actually be there and do the thing if you want to be good at the thing.
It's a crazy concept.
It's amazing. Specificity applies
to everything.
Almost everywhere. Yeah. And my career has essentially been a series of those same examples where I have gotten to a place where, you know, I've worked with someone, I feel like I've reached a limit, and I want to see what's next. And the next thing that interests me, I'm able to throw myself into that and attach myself to someone who's willing to take me on so I can learn and get that hands-on experience. And, you know, there have been times where it hasn't always gone the way I wanted to. Like, I haven't been able to do that. But as soon as I could return to working with a mentor, working with another coach, while all the while constantly trying to put myself in a position to work with the demographic I wanted to work with. You know, initially I just wanted to work with Gen Pop.
Yeah. Train people.
And I found out real quickly, I was like, this sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Pros and cons.
Pros and cons, dream. Right? Yeah. But it didn't really, you know, get me going.
Yeah.
And I got my first athlete and I was like, oh, this is it.
It's my jam right here.
And then the problem became, you know, how do I bridge the gap between, you know, where I'm at right now and where I want to go. Ultimately, the goal for this podcast today has parallels a lot of what we've been talking about, which is, like, you got to jump in with both feet, even if you feel like you're not ready. I feel like, you know, we are. This style of conversation is, we're laying the foundation. I'm excited for the future when we're able to use this experience and the strength and the stuff that has shaped us into the coaches and people we are. And then we are able to bring people in outside of our, you know, circle and immediate impact and hear their versions of that and what makes them great and what gets them going and how they did it and how they got there. So abruptly, we're going to end the first episode of Coach Me Up. If you took the time to listen to this, I appreciate you. You know, it's going to be a wild ride, but, you know, today's episode is not going to look like episode 10. I can promise you that.